Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Gentlemen, I'm Alfred Adisk, and this is Financial Survival for Tuesday, 11th day in November, year of our Lord, 2014. Melody is in the shipping department. Got a little delayed because there were some delays in receiving Silver Eagles, and she's catching up on that right now. So I'll be doing the program by myself. Possible exception of Frank, the producer. He has something to do with this program. I'm not sure what Frank does exactly, but it must be important because I know he gets paid to do it. I'll do the market reports to begin with. Gold is up $13.40 per ounce to $1,166 per ounce. Silver's up 13 cents to $15.84. Platinum's up 10 bucks to $1,210 per ounce. Palladium's up $10 to $776 per ounce. U.S. dollar index, of course, there's been an almost remarkable correlation between increases in the price of gold or decreases in the price of gold and correlative moves in the U.S. dollar index. You know, in the past couple of years ago, there was the correlation between moves in the dollar index and gold was maybe 70%. If the dollar went up on the dollar index, gold might go down, it might not. Right now, I don't know what the percentage is, but just subjectively, it appears that the correlation is much higher today than it was 2 years ago. If I had to guess, it's at least 90% right now. 2 years ago, it might have been 70%, maybe not even that high. So clearly, what's happening to gold is the reverse of whatever's happening to the U.S. dollar as measured on the U.S. dollar index. This might not be a 100% one-to-one correlation. I'm not arguing that, but the dollar index is key. It's certainly highly indicative of what's happening to gold, and we'll talk more about that in a couple of moments. Dow Jones is down 2 points today. That's triviality, 17,611. NASDAQ is up 9 points to 4,660. New York Stock Exchange is up 15 points to 10,907. And crude oil, came up 21 cents to $77.61 per barrel. I think the important point to emphasize for me in terms of the price of gold and the volatility we've seen in the price of gold. Gold has fallen dramatically in the last, we've had a difficult 2 years. But in the last month or two, this has been a dramatic decline. At the same time, the U.S. dollar index is up probably now 13%. I don't know. I haven't figured the numbers. I did back a week or so ago. It was up 11%. I'd say it's up maybe 12, 13% as compared to where it was 6 months ago. That's really an extraordinary gain in the U.S. dollar index. And the reason it's gaining is, again, because U.S. dollar index is a way of measuring the trade-weighted average of six currencies, and that's the euro, the Japanese yen, the UK, the English pound, Canadian dollar, Swedish krona, Swiss franc, primarily euro, 57% of this balance, this weight, 14% for the yen, 12% for the English pound. As those six fiat currencies on balance go up or down in value, then the opposite takes place with the U.S. dollar. It's teeter-totter. The U.S. dollar index is essentially a teeter-totter. And on one end, we've got the U.S. dollar, and on the other end, we have these six currencies. Well, these currencies, the other six currencies, they're not necessarily moving in unison. Some of them go up, some of them go down. But when you weight it out, when the majority of these currencies are going up, then the purchasing power of the dollar is going down, and we experience inflation in this country. The dollar is becoming worth less. When a majority of these six currencies on our teeter-totter, when a majority of those go down in value, they are inflated and they go down in value, the dollar, they fall, and the dollar rises and becomes more valuable on the other end of the teeter-totter. Now, the dollar has been rising in value in spectacular fashion, and as a consequence, the price of gold has been falling. Whether or not the U.S. dollar index is directly related to the price of gold is an interesting question. But we can pretty much say, especially in the last 6 months, 6-12 months, that the U.S. dollar index has closely corresponded with changes in the price of gold. The point I'm trying to get to is that gold, the price of gold goes down when the purchasing power of the dollar goes up. Purchasing power of the dollar goes up when the purchasing power of the other six currencies on the other end of this teeter-totter, when they decline into inflation. Japan has, the Bank of Japan has indicated that it's going to cause massive inflation in Japan. They are going to pump more and more and more Japanese yen into the economy with the idea of inflating their currency. And if they do, to whatever degree that takes place in Japan, that will tend to make the U.S. dollar more valuable. The European Central Bank has declared its intention to also engage in quantitative easing in Europe in order to stimulate the European economy, and that quantitative easing will include printing trillions of more euros. Certainly hundreds of billions and maybe several trillion more euros are going to be printed in Europe in order to cause inflation that will stimulate the European economy and get them functioning again, drag them out of a recession, or at least that's the theory. So the heavy weight right now of the six currencies, and that's 58% is a euro and 14% is the Japanese yen, they are bound and determined, if we can believe what they say, to cause significant inflation in their currencies in the near future. If they're going to inflate, The dollar sitting on the other end of our teeter-totter is going to deflate and rise in value. And as the dollar becomes worth more, commodities, things like crude oil and gasoline and gold will appear to become less valuable. The prices will fall. Now, there's other factors involved here, but these are within the factors we're considering. That's the way this should work out. What's wrong with that picture? How long can this continue? And the first lesson is that our government has been persistently inflating the dollar since at least 1971. That's why we've lost, the dollar has lost over 95% of its purchasing power since 1971, when the dollar became a pure fiat currency backed by nothing. It's been inflated to a degree where it's lost over 95% of its purchasing power as compared to gold. And this didn't happen by accident. This is policy. This is what government wants. It's what they have wanted. What does that translate into? 39, 49, over 50 years, we've had a policy of government needs inflation. Government depends on inflation. Even now, the Federal Reserve will tell you that they are bound and determined to restore 2% inflation in this country. They claim we don't have that. But they claim they will restore 2% inflation. Now, why do they want 2% inflation? And the answer is because they don't want deflation. They don't want the dollar to become more valuable. They haven't wanted that since 1971. All right? It's been standard policy, inflate, 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 inflate. And yet, here we are, watching the dollar, the value of the dollar as measured by the U.S. dollar index, we've seen it grow dramatically. That means one of two things. Either the government has abandoned its policy of inflating the dollar, and I'm going to show you why that is extremely improbable. It's not impossible, but it's extremely improbable. They've either abandoned their policy of inflating the dollar, or they are temporarily allowing deflation in this country in order to help with inflation in the economies of Japan and Europe on a temporary basis, or the forces of deflation in this country have grown so powerful that the government is incapable of resisting them. But I look at this evidence, I look at this, my understanding of this, and it tells me that the deflation cannot continue. First, government has had an established policy of promoting inflation in this country since at least 1971. Actually, 40-some years. I think I said 50 earlier, over 40 years. And it really goes back further than that, but they want inflation. Why? First, because inflation is good for borrowers. Anyone who's listening to this program who's ever bought a house has almost certainly heard someone encourage them to take the loan to buy the house with the argument that you'll be paying off the debt with cheaper dollars. That argument is based on the expectation that the dollar would continue to inflate and therefore lose purchasing power, lose value. And by the time you got done with a 30-year mortgage, the value of the dollars you were paying on your mortgage would be, who knows? They might be half of the value of the dollars when you originally borrowed them. Right? And the implication is, well, you're paying it off in cheaper dollars, and that becomes an incentive for people to borrow and buy a house or build a house, and it stimulates the economy. Inflation helps to stimulate the economy because it encourages us to take out loans. because we'll be able to pay them off in cheaper dollars. Deflation, on the other hand, inhibits us. We realize that if we're in an era of deflation, we're going to be paying off that loan with more expensive dollars. It won't be easier to pay. It'll be harder to pay if we're in an era of deflation when we take out a loan. And if we understand that, we're going to sit back and say, I ain't going to borrow any money right now in a period of deflation. Are you crazy? And paid off in more expensive dollars? If we won't borrow money, we don't go out and buy the house. We don't buy the new car. We have to rely on savings. If we're not borrowing and spending, we're not stimulating the economy. The economy tends to slow down. It tends to go into a recession or even a depression. And one of the hallmarks of a depression is the dollar deflates and becomes more valuable. So you can get into a deflationary spiral. Once the stuff starts, it's not easily stopped. And all of the quantitative easing that we've had for the past 6 years, it's based on deflation. The government was trying to inflate the currency. Nobody said the word deflation, but that's what the Federal Reserve was afraid of. That's what the federal government was terrified by. Deflation. They can't stand it. It will slow the economy. It will push us into an economic depression. And so in order to prevent deflation that was very close back in 2008, right, prevent an economic depression and the deflation that would have been extraordinarily close back in 2008, Ben Bernanke and the Federal Reserve and the government, they decide we're going to spend money. We're going to put out $850 billion in the first year, and we're going to give it to the banks that are too big to fail, and we're going to sustain this economy by flooding it with paper dollars. Well, they didn't really flood the economy with paper dollars, but they did print and distribute to banks $4 trillion paper dollars, fiat dollars, and it had some effect insofar as it at least prevented us from sliding into deflation. Nobody was talking about deflation, but that was the real motive. We had to stop deflation. And we went through all of quantitative easing and all the trillions of dollars and the zero interest rates, and these are all supposedly based on protecting us from deflation. That was what this was about. And yet here we are, looking at the U.S. dollar index, having jumped up from something in the 70s to nearly, it's been over 88 in the last few days. It's a phenomenal leap, and it's evidence of deflation. Now, what is going on? Has the government simply said, oh, forget it, let's have some deflation for a while? We don't need to worry about making inflation. We'll allow deflation to take. Is that what's happened? If it has, it indicates the government is prepared to collapse the economy. We aren't going to have significant deflation in this country where the dollar becomes more and more valuable. It's not going to continue unless we have an economic depression. Secondly, the federal government is the biggest borrower and biggest debtor in the world. The last thing government should want for its own self-interest is to see the cost of borrowing increase because the dollars are becoming more valuable, and see the size of the debt increase. They don't want to pay off the national debt with more expensive dollars. They depend on inflation in order to pay off the national debt with cheaper dollars. What's the point of all this? The point is that the logic of the evidence I'm able to see indicates that it is an extraordinary anomaly for government to allow deflation at this time. And the odds, not necessarily the absolute truth, but the odds, strong odds, favor government's going to quit deflating the dollar. They're going to stop deflation. They got to stop deflation. They're going to stop deflation one way or another in the very near future. And if they don't, they're going to have an economic collapse and financial insolvency for the government. And if I'm correct and they do stop deflation, the price of gold has to go back up, and it has to go back up dramatically. I'm Alfred Addisk. This is Financial Survival. Take a break for some commercial announcements and be right back. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Are you concerned about prescription drug dependency to stay healthy? Are you worried that the cost and availability of your medications may put your health at risk? Perhaps it's time you consider a natural, safe, and effective way to deal with your health problems. If only you knew where to start. Start right here. Tune in to Herb Talk Live with herbalist Wendy Wilson every Tuesday and Thursday evening, 7 p.m. on AmericanVoiceRadio.com, where your healthcare options just became endless.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addisk, and this is Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. Discount Gold and Silver Special du jour is one gold $5 Liberty, 20 pre-1921 circulated Morgan dollars, shipping included, all for $920. Okay. And you know, you get some gold, get some silver. Both of them are almost fantastically underpriced at this time. There's no way of guaranteeing that the price isn't going to go further, but common sense pretty much tells you it can't fall much further. These have to go up. Again, one gold, $5 Liberty. 20 pre-1921 circulated Morgan dollars, shipping included, $920. Good deal. Likely to increase significantly over the course of the next 12 months. And part of the reason I say that is what we're trying to explain in the first part of the program. This government has had a policy of inflation for most of my lifetime, and certainly since 1971. That being so, the current deflation that appears evident on the U.S. dollar index and appears evident in the falling prices of crude oil and gold, that deflation is contrary to a policy that's been established for several generations in this country. Now, it's not impossible that the government could have changed its policy and said, to heck with inflation, we're going to cause deflation. But if that's what they're doing, if they're going to allow deflation, if they're going to allow the fiat dollar to become more valuable and therefore the prices of other commodities and goods and services to decline, they're going to precipitate an economic depression in this country. That has to be their intent. Everything I've seen and probably everything most of you have read on the subject indicates that when you go into recession and particularly into depression, economic depression, you're going to see deflation. The currency becomes more valuable, right? That's typically what happens. We can expect that if we're going to encourage deflation, they're going to also encourage an economic depression. Now, what is the... I won't say they wouldn't do it, won't say they can't do it, but why would government want to put this country into an economic depression at this time? I don't think they can do it and get away with it. Everybody's going to figure out who's really responsible. They can't make it appear just to be an accident. I don't think they want to do it. It's contrary to established policy. It tells me that the government has to make a serious reversal in the near future, and we're going to end the value of the dollar as measured in terms of gold, as measured in terms of the U.S. dollar index. The value of the dollar has to begin to go back into inflation and fall and fall and fall. And when it does, price of gold, among others, is going to rise, rise, rise. Another reason I think that's close is because we've seen some extraordinarily volatile days in the gold market over the last month or two, and particularly just in the last, I don't know, maybe 2 weeks. See price moves of $10, $15, $20, $30, even $50 in a single day. And it goes up, and it goes down, and it goes down a couple more, and then it goes up again. That volatility suggests to me that we are on the edge of a major change. Something is going to happen, and if I had to guess, before the end of this year. But if I'm at all correct, no later than the end of the first quarter of next year. We can't have this level of volatility and still expect everything to hold together. We can't expect the economy to maintain, be coherent and solid as long as prices are going up $10, $20, $50 a day, going down, same amount. There's something back here, all right? This is like driving a car 80 miles an hour, and all of a sudden you get a strange vibration. That's what this volatility. I don't know what's causing the vibration, but something's going thump, 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 and the car is going 80 miles an hour, and that means to me we had better slow down in a hurry or find out what's wrong or make a repair. Something's got to be done. This is dangerous at this speed. We're going to see a change, and that change is either we're going into an economic depression and perhaps plunging into an economic depression, or Federal Reserve is going to announce something like another dose of quantitative easing and tell us that they're going to start pumping another trillion fiat dollars into the economy, and this time it may actually reach the economy. The last $4 trillion, most of it sat in the banks. It never really got to the economy, never really stimulated our economy. It may have been loaned out the third world nations where they had higher rates of return, higher interest rates. Banks may have loaned it out there and caused an economic boom in third world developing economies for maybe 3 years out of the last six. That may be attributed The Fed printed the money. They gave it to the banks, but they set the interest rate down close to zero. And the banks said, we're not lending this money to the great unwashed in the United States. Just because we got it for free doesn't mean we're going to lend it for free. We're going to lend the money into Brazil or other third world countries that are paying a decent rate of return. And thereby they stimulated quantitative easing may be the real source for stimulating the economies of some third world nations, at least for a couple of years. Now it's being, money's starting to come back here, and those nations are losing their stimulus and they're having problems, but something's going on. And that means that we are either going to go dramatically up or dramatically, or it doesn't mean it. It indicates that we may be, that we may see a dramatic move upward in the very near future or a dramatic move downward in the very near future. And if it goes downward, meaning we go into recession, depression, not just recession, into depression and particularly into deflation, the government can't deal with that. The government won't be able to borrow money. They won't be able to afford to borrow money in order to hand out benefits and entitlements and fund programs or pay pensions. It will push the government. If we go into deflation, we are going to a moment when the government has to admit it's insolvent. It can't pay its bills. Government cannot survive deflation. This economy can't survive deflation. It'll go into depression if we're going to have deflation. And the government can't survive deflation. They're going to have to repudiate the debt, or at least substantial portions of it, the national debt. And when they do, people that are holding paper debt instruments are going to sit back and say, oh my gosh, I have a piece of paper that says it's worth $100,000. Government just repudiated the debt. Guess what? I have nothing but a piece of paper. If the government repudiates the debt, they repudiate masses of capital that just disappear because that capital is nothing but paper. And it just disappears. The government cannot survive deflation in its current form. And almost certainly, if they allow us to continue into deflation, the dollar itself will have to be destroyed. The government can't. So I just look at this, and I'm maybe belaboring this point more than it needs to be, but no matter what government does right now, they either have to go back to inflation, and if they want inflation, nothing screams inflation like a rising price of gold. Government needs the price of gold to go up if they want to hold the dollar together. Government needs the price of gold to go up if they want to hold the economy together. And if it's true that the government's been able to manipulate the price of gold over the course of the last 10 or 15 years, it has to also manipulate it to suppress it. It has to also be true that the government can manipulate the price to increase it. In the event that deflation really is catching hold in this country, I'm saying, look, they're going to have to go to inflation and the gold goes up. In the event that deflation catches hold in this country, the dollar is going to gain so much value that they won't be able to use it at the governmental level. As it causes economic depression, it means there's less economic activity, which means people have less jobs, it means businesses make less profits, and that means less revenue for the government. The government has less tax revenue during a depression. That means government tends to shrink in size and power. They can't throw money around like they did in the past. They can't invade countries all over the world whenever it was seemed like fun. In the event of deflation, I believe that the dollar is going to be reset or replaced. And one way or another, an enormous amount of inflation has to take place. So what I'm trying to get to is the idea that even if we go into inflation, price of gold has to go up. If we go into deflation, dollar's going to die, and everybody's going to come running and screaming and say, give me some gold, give me some silver, give me something tangible. And that should push the price of gold and silver upward. So from my perspective, the government is kind of caught between the rock and the hard place, and gold is down here near the bottom of a valley, and no matter what happens, whether we go into serious inflation or we go into serious deflation, it appears to me that the value of gold has to increase significantly. Not just a little bit, not 5 years from now. I think we're going to see this thing turn around before the end of this year, but certainly before the end of the first quarter. If the price of gold continues to fall and the value of the dollar continues to rise, you and I are going into a Great Depression. And if it doesn't happen, we're going back into a significant inflation. And either way, I just don't see how you can lose with gold right now unless you lose your nerve. We've had problems with the price of gold falling. I know it. It's unpleasant. It's scary for a lot of people and the rest of it. But you're not going to lock in your losses unless you sell your gold. If you can hang tough one way or another, price of gold's going up. And in my opinion, there's a very good chance, not a guarantee, but a very good chance that it's going to rise dramatically before the end of this year. Now, when I say dramatically, it might only go up to 1250 or 1275. Right? I'm not predicting a $1,900 gold by the end of the year, but a significant rise from where it is today. And enough where people say, okay, this thing is now rising. We can see the trend, we'll catch the momentum, and we'll do what we can. What else have we got to talk about here? Obamacare, this is a good one. I don't know if I have enough time. I'll do this in the next segment. They'll save Obamacare for the next segment. Here's share of first-time homebuyers hits 27-year low. This is from the Wall Street Journal. It was, back in 2002, 42% of the people buying homes were first-time buyers. In 2010, 50% of the people buying homes were first-time buyers, but today it's 33%. It's down significantly. Just 33% of primary residents sold this year were purchased by first-time buyers, down from 38% last year to the lowest level since 1987. The National Association of Realtors says that the first-time buyer share of has typically hovered around 40% since 1981. The headwinds, the problems, higher student debt, rising rents, weaker job market, all of these are inhibiting people from buying new homes, especially young people. And banks are much less willing to overlook credit blemishes or spotty incomes, which means it's harder to get a loan. Separate surveys, including one by the Federal Reserve earlier this year, showed that insufficient savings or income were the biggest headwinds keeping renters from buying homes. Don't have any savings? You're probably going to have a hard time getting a loan. Many households may also be less able to get help from their parents than in the past because their parents' homes have fallen sharply in value. It's interesting that we use the homes for automatic teller machines where we could just withdraw money, take out a second mortgage. Homes were a source of income and rising personal value, personal wealth. And that personal wealth not only helped mom and dad, it helped a lot of mom and dad's kids. When mom and dad went out and guaranteed or made the down payment on the kid's house. Now mom and dad are broke. Now the kids can't buy. All of this is consistent, it's not proof, but it's evidence of a slowing economy. It's evidence that we are, if we're not already in a depression, that we are certainly flirting with that possibility. And government needs to do something rapidly, or everyone's going to tear. There's going to be a very serious price to be paid. I'm Alfred Addisk, and this is Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment, and we'll talk about Obamacare. Please stay tuned.
Pandemics will be a part of our future. The question is, how do we protect ourselves? Are you willing to put your trust in untested vaccine, hoping it kills mutating viruses? Remember, in 1976, health officials tried to inoculate Americans with swine flu, and there was a 300% death rate for those inoculated, and millions were paid out in damages. God gave you a sophisticated immune system, and in times of need, you can make it 10 times stronger. So there's no need to panic. Just get prepared. Call Apothecary Herbs to order your upgraded pandemic kit. You will have 8 professional strength formulas offering broad spectrum immune boosting protection. Take a stand, have a plan, have peace, and request your pandemic kit today. Call Apothecary Herbs toll free 866-229-3663 or online thepowerherbs.com. That's 866-229-3663 or thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addisk here at Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver, 1-800-375-4188. Remind you, today's special, one gold $5 Liberty coin, 20 pre-1921 circulated Morgan dollars, shipping included, $920. Give Melody a call, 1-800-375-4188, Discount Gold and Silver. Take advantage of the offer. Again, one $5 Liberty, gold, 20 pre-1921 circulated Morgan dollars, shipping included, $920. Take advantage of that opportunity, folks. Here's Obamacare. This is almost too good. This is one of those stories. Actually, it's two stories. It's almost enough to make you believe that God really does play a part in what goes on in this world. And that there are some things where even the good Lord is going to sit back. He's going to say, okay, enough of that. This is not going to be allowed. Here's the headline from townhall.com. And it's been on a couple of other publications in the last day or so. Obamacare architect. Yeah, we lied to the stupid American people to get it passed. Okay? That's the headline. And they have, they say, meet Jonathan Gruber, a professor at MIT and an architect of Obamacare. During a panel event last year, this story is just now breaking loose. Apparently, nobody paid any attention at the time of this panel event. But this guy was on videotape, apparently, and last year, and he made a couple of statements that are almost, I mean, this is just about phenomena. And this is the guy, well, one of the architects of Obamacare. He wasn't the architect, but he's one of them, one of the principal people responsible for drafting the legislation we now call Obamacare. And he says, during a panel event last year about how the legislation passed, turning over a sixth of the U.S. economy to the government, Mr. Gruber admitted that the Obama administration went through tortuous that's in quotes, his word, tortuous measures to keep the facts about the legislation from the American people, including covering up the redistribution of wealth from the healthy to the sick in the legislation, and the fact that Obamacare is, in fact, a tax. Right? Now, the video of his comments recently surfaced ahead of second enrollment period for Obamacare at healthcare.gov. Here he is, Mr. Gruber, the professor. He says, you can't do it politically. You just literally cannot do it. Transparent financing and also transparent spending. I mean, this bill was written in a tortured way to make sure the Congressional Budget Office did not score the mandate as taxes. They intentionally wrote the bill in a way to conceal the fact that it was a tax. And not just to conceal it as the fact that it was a tax from the public, but also to conceal it from the Congressional Budget Office. The purpose behind the way they drafted was to deceive and defraud the people and even other elements of the government. Where does he go? The video here, you can't do it politically. A bill was written in a tortured way. If the Congressional Budget Office scored the mandate as taxes, the bill dies. No one would have voted for it if they knew it was a tax. This is one of the architects. Okay, so it's written to do that, Gruber said. In terms of risk-rated subsidies, if you had a law which said that healthy people are going to pay in, you made explicit healthy people pay in and sick people get money, it would not have passed. And yet he's saying that's the truth of the matter. Healthy people are going to contribute a lot of money to this health care bill, and it's going to go to sick people. Now, that in itself is not surprising, all right? In theory, that's the idea behind insurance. But the idea behind insurance is that I should be able to pay my insurance based on my lifestyle, my age, all right? My health level. And then I pay an appropriate amount given my personal circumstances. But under Obamacare, those of you that are healthy are going to be paid not on the basis of your health. You're not going to get a premium based on how healthy you are. You're going to get a premium based on how sick other people are. This becomes a kind of open-ended mandate to just charge you more and more and more. The more sick people we have, the more money we get to take from those of you who are healthy. The sick people don't have to be responsible. If they want to do crack, if they want to engage in unsafe sex and catch AIDS, no big deal. Huh? No big deal. You want to smoke? Go ahead, smoke. We don't care. You can engage in all those unsafe and unhealthy practices you want, and you will not be personally reliable for your health. We're going to get some of the smart people out here, some of the responsible people, some of the healthy people, and they will pay for your medical care when you finally reap your reward for having behaved like a fool for much of your life. Well, not everybody gets sick is there because they've done things foolishly. I understand that. But a lot of people are. And as long as we aren't going to hold people personally accountable, what's the incentive? Why shouldn't I just eat ice cream and cake? Yeah, I know it's not good for me, but why not? It tastes good. It might make me sick, but who cares? It might make me diabetic. What do I care? I got the government's going to pick out my back. Well, actually, the healthy people, the smart people, the ones who aren't spending their lives eating ice cream and cake, they've got my back. Huh? I get to eat the ice cream and cake, and they get to pay for whatever consequence flow from that. Mr. Gruber continues. Again, he says, if you had a law which said that healthy people are going to pay in, you made it explicit, healthy people pay in and sick people get money, it would not have passed. And the reason is because it absolves each of us from personal responsibility for our own health. There's the problem. Mr. Gruber continues, he says, lack of transparency is a huge political advantage, and basically, call it the stupidity of the American voter or whatever, but basically, that was really, really critical to get for the thing to pass. They needed stupid Americans to sit back and vote for this thing. And this is from one of the architects of the program, of the legislation. They relied on the stupidity of the American people. They lied to us, and they relied on our stupidity in order to get Obamacare passed. And this coming from one of the architects of the program. Huh? So here's the next headline. This is in the Washington Times, and it said Obamacare may not have enough enrollees to stay solvent. Right? The administration on Monday said fewer than 10 million Americans will enroll in Obamacare's health exchanges this go-around, well short of the 13 million target congressional scorekeepers deemed critical to its economics, suggesting another rocky rollout for the law's second year in full operation. In other words, they need 13 million to sign up for Obamacare. They don't think they're going to get more than 10 million. And that means Obamacare, they need 13 million for Obamacare to be economically feasible. They have Obamacare designed and it's supposed to cost so much money and provide so much benefits and so on. They've done mathematics, but the mathematics are based on the presumption that at least 13 million people will sign up. And they're saying, we're not going to get that. Policy advisors of the Health and Human Services Department estimated that 9 million to 9.9 million would enroll through the exchanges, or only a slight increase over the 8 million that the administration says were active at the end of the first enrollment period this April. They're not going to get the 5 million they need. They're only going to get 1, maybe 2 million at the most. They need 5 million to stay solvent. You look at this, and it is, for me, again, almost inspiring. Surprise, surprise. Maybe the American voters are a little too gullible or a little too trusting. That's true. But maybe they're not stupid. Maybe contrary to what the MIT professor Gruber said, maybe they're not so dumb after all. The Obama administration's lies may have fooled some people in the first year of Obamacare. But in the second year, those lies are better understood and create a reason all in themselves to shun Obamacare. Do you want to be associated with a program that is admittedly based on lies and is admittedly based on the presumption that you people are a bunch of morons? Is that a program that deserves your political and financial support? They're suggesting here. I'm suggesting the answer is no, no, and no. If Obamacare attracts so few enrollees that it can't work mathematically, you can bet that the Republicans will want to take credit for repealing that legislation. You can also bet that Jonathan Gruber, he's the guy we talked about in the first article, who's smart enough to be a professor at MIT, and smart enough to help write Obamacare in a way that's so convoluted that the public can't easily understand what it means, is not smart enough to keep his mouth shut and is therefore not only a chief architect for Obamacare, but one of the primary reasons that it may soon be repealed. You get that? The smart guy who helped conceal and helped lie and helped deceive and depended on the American people's stupidity, he may ultimately be so dumb that he helps to cause Obamacare to be repealed. David is calling in from Indiana. David, what you got?
Yes, sir. Hey, I suspect that if you used the same line of reasoning with the Obamacare Act and tied it to why they will not audit the Fed,
yeah,
and tied that to the political families who profited,
yeah,
and the corporate banks in their holdings, you could clean out this government and straighten up a good part of this world in 6 months.
Well, I don't know if you can do it in 6 months, but what you're talking about, I agree with what you're describing, which is wholesale corruption and treason within the government of the United States. It's not an anomaly. It is a policy.
There's a definite reason why smart men cannot figure out what the hell is going on in this world. Inflation, deflation, what? Nobody knows anything. And
yeah.
It's because of the same line of action.
Well, tell me exactly what you mean by the same line of action. You mean the lies and the deceit and the corruption?
The acceptance of this immorality of deception.
Yeah.
At every turn in leadership and power and authority.
It's like Obama. He's now come up and just said, screw you people. I'm going to pass immigration reform, even though the American people don't like it, even though he has no lawful basis to do it, even though it's contrary to his obligation to secure our borders. He doesn't care. He is a criminal in the White House, and he just sits there and laughs and grins and says, screw y'all, because I'm going to do it.
He can't do it alone.
It's astonishing. Well, he can't do it. You're exact. That's true. That's the point. This isn't just Obama. He's the front man on this. It's like Colonel Sanders selling rotten chicken. And he's just grinning because he's got the only chicken store in town. You're going to buy his chicken or you aren't going to buy any chicken at all. But he's grinning about it and laughing in your face, in mine, in the face of everybody in this country. It is, and the both political parties go right along with it. Both of them. Not just the Democrats, Republicans, they're going along. They're a little slower, they're a little behind, but they're in the same boat.
You take good care of yourself, Alfred.
All right, I'll do that, and you do the same, David. Thank you for your call. You know, one of the things I want to talk about, and I've been meaning to write this article, and I haven't written it yet. I'll give you a thumbnail sketch here in the last minute or so before we run out of time. Much of the corruption we see can be traced back to the New World Order. And some people sit there and say, well, that's just some bizarre conspiracy theory. You're crazy. It can't be traced back. Yeah, it can. And here's why. Every SOB, every treasonous whore in the cat house on the Potomac who supports the New World Order, they are in violation of the Constitution of the United States. There is no proviso in that Constitution for anyone in this government to abandon, to destroy the United States of America in order to enter into some union with Mexico and Canada and ultimately a New World Order. They have no constitutional authority to engage in this treason. It is in this destruction, and this destruction does constitute treason. And the point I'm trying to make is that insofar as these people don't give a damn about the Constitution, I guarantee they don't give a damn about any other laws that you can point to, and therefore they will engage in scandalous and criminal behavior because they are treasonous to begin with. They don't have enough respect for your law to even protect this country. All right? You can't be surprised that they behave like a bunch of gangsters. I'll amplify that argument another time and write the article one of these days. I want to thank all of you for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, and Frank the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.